Well, hello everyone sitting here in church and in your own homes. And thank you, Kim, our new deacon, for the way you've led so thoughtfully for what is not an easy one. It really isn't. There's a, when I look back on it, quite a journey. January the 10th, 2021, and it was 2021, was the first Beatitude. And since then, we come to the last one today, we've been, somebody called it the Christian Everest, because it is so demanding and so reaches and stretches us, doesn't it? This business of living with Jesus and living like Jesus, it's so demanding. And here we come to the last one. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And this is the only one, and I don't know if you noticed it when Andrew read, but it's the only beatitude which Jesus adds something personally to. And he says, blessed are you. He's looking at them now. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, falsely say all kinds of evil things against you because of me. And they need to hear this, because this first century for Christians is a very cruel one. Disciples will be martyred. Many believers will be persecuted. In fact, by the end of the first century, the word for witness and the word for martyr were the same word. Because to speak for Jesus and to witness to him publicly would mean sometimes death itself. And this awful brutality, where Jesus has to speak these words to people about what it means to belong to him and follow him, are so need to be heard today too. Apparently, Open Doors, we saw a clip of their work. They estimate 340 million Christians today in our world currently are persecuted because of their belief in Jesus. In the 20th century, more Christians were martyred than in the previous 19 centuries put together. There's such a brutality to what's going on right now that we recognize these words have to be heard by so many. The Open Doors, I remember the story, I wasn't here when the story was told, Kim did, about the L-shaped room and Andy Henman banging on the door. I do remember a prayer meeting that Carol and George led, oh, in those heady days when we could meet together freely. And it was on the persecuted Christians, and it was on the range of those in need of our prayers. I remember the sense of what we're called to do when we remember brothers and sisters who are persecuted in the gravest, most serious of ways. And Open Doors has this plan, the top 50 countries at any time which are persecuting, where Christians, it's the hardest to be a Christian. And number one on the list is North Korea. And there's Afghanistan, Somalia. And as you come down the list, there's Libya and Yemen and Nigeria. And as you see the list and they explain, it's changing because countries changing order and the sense of viciousness increases. And so you've got China, which has come up. We saw about the house churches still meeting there, but increasing tension and pressure on them. And of course, Sri Lanka, which wasn't there really until it really burst up. And in 2019, Easter Sunday, we won't forget that, many of us, because we worshipped Jesus Christ is risen today. And in three churches in Sri Lanka and some hotels simultaneously, these guerrillas burst in, suicide bombers, and 269 people were killed, many of them as they came to worship Jesus. And a year on, we saw the way they remember Anusha Kumari. There are so many stories. Everything has a story. Anusha Kumari speaks, my husband and two children were killed once, but I die every second since. A sense of the awfulness of what it means. And so today, this needs to be heard. The big question is, how do we hear it ourselves? You know, we had our Easter day here, and we were back in church, you remember, and I was thrilled to preach. I was all jazzed up about it. The last thing I expected was a suicide bomber to come in. None of us, we're in a very different culture, and it's different for us, isn't it? Well, there are truths which are so vital here for us to really be faced by. The first is that Jesus provokes hostile reactions, negative reactions. There are positive ones, of course, but there are negative ones. As a boy and a young man growing up, people loved him in Nazareth. They thought he was just great. And Luke records in 252 that that wonderful sentence that he grew in body, of course, and in wisdom. A great combination. And he grew in body and wisdom and in favor with God and everyone. Everybody thought the world of him. And if it's right, and we think it probably is, that his father Joseph died when Jesus was still fairly young, he would have had all sorts of responsibilities. People thought the world of Jesus until that moment he speaks in the synagogue, tells them about God and the breadth of God's mercy. And it says, in fury, they rose up. The same people? And they drove him to the cliff edge as to throw him down. You know, it's only in the third chapter of Mark's gospel, the third chapter at the end of it, that the religious leaders meet together to conspire, to plot and to kill. Why does Jesus provoke such negative reaction? Because he faces people with God, with the reality of who God is. J.K. Galbraith was the person who coined the expression the affluent society. And he had another expression which became commonplace too, conventional wisdom. The mass of things that the mass of people want to hear. And he said the great commentators of any age, they make a great practice of doing it as well as they can, saying the mass of things that the mass of people want to say, conventional wisdom. And he had this line in his book where he said, the only fatal blow to this sort of wisdom, this is a sentence, the only fatal blow to this sort of occurs when the march of history flings up something it cannot explain. Now, he wasn't writing about Jesus, but of course he was writing about Jesus. Because when Jesus enters history in a stable, in the way that nobody could ever believe God entering our world by, as Jesus comes in, so he confronts a world which is so used to hearing things they want to hear, it with ourselves central, our relationships, the way we work out our economics and our politics, what really matters for us as people. And Jesus entering this world explodes this conventional wisdom by beginning elsewhere with God, the real God, the holy God, who in his regard for us as a people sees us, like John's mentioned last week, this great chasm between the kind of people he yearns for us to be, he made us to be, and where we are. The chasm that Jesus makes so plain, because here God in his holiness is also, as Jesus makes plain, a God who wants to reach across and to redeem and save a world. And who wants to hear that? Seriously. Who wants in their own lifestyles, when they're comfortable the way things are going, the way they've worked it out, to be told there's another way? Especially if this is the way. And who's used if we've got life worked out and all the kind of truths of conventional wisdom making it work for us, wants to hear there is another truth, a completely different truth of a different kingdom and of a real God? And who, when we're quite comfortable with lives as we've made them work, they could be more comfortable, but we're working on it. Who wants to hear that there is a way which actually is completely different, because you lose who you are for the sake of who God wants you to be in his grace. This, who wants that? And when Jesus faces the world, he creates this extraordinary implosion on conventional wisdom. Nobody can believe this. I once was asked to do a Bible week for a city where the churches had come together to plan it. And they said to me, what do you feel you would take as the theme for this? And I'd been doing some work on Jesus and some of the provocative questions where he looked people in the eye and he put them on the spot. And I said to the organizers, the committee, I'd like to take the theme, the confrontational Christ, the confrontational Jesus. And the committee met to debate it, and in the end they agreed. And so the publicity went up and all the rest. And when I arrived to do this, this leader came up to me and he said, "You need to know, I don't like that title because that's not how my Jesus is. He's kind and he's invitational. This idea of a confrontational Jesus, I don't like it." It turned out that several people didn't like it. Who does? There's a way in which, as Jesus faces us with the truth about God, that turns everything upside down and makes people feel desperately uncomfortable, and in the end, in the Gospels, will lead to the cross. And Jesus says, the thing is that the world just hates me. And if I hadn't come, they wouldn't have been guilty. It was in that section from John 15. We don't often go on to read. We love the first bit. And Paul Hills was there beautifully a couple of weeks ago. We don't often go on to the next bit. But he said, if I hadn't come, the world wouldn't be guilty of sin. But now I have come, they know. And now they've seen, they know, and they are without excuse. That's the reality. Jesus is somebody who comes and shakes us. See, I think he is a confrontational Jesus. And closely linked with that, of course, is this other truth that his followers provoke negative reactions to. And Jesus makes it plain. He says, if the world hates you, bear in mind that it hated me first, but I've called you out of this world. And that's why the world hates you. You're in a different place. You're in something called my kingdom. And you live for different purposes and you live in different ways. And it's a challenge. And I don't know about you, but this makes me feel, especially when we think about the persecuted Christians today, makes me feel incredibly uncomfortable, because I know I haven't been as brave as I should have been in situations, even in our easygoing culture, where I should have stood for Jesus more plainly. Of course, I'm a Baptist minister, so in a way I wear my colours a bit. And interestingly, Jesus seems to take in the fact that there are different levels of persecution when he speaks of them. Blessed are you when you're insulted, when people falsely say evil things against you. I've been insulted. I mean, really insulted. And sometimes, I don't know whether you have, sometimes people say the most incredible things. It was Oswald Chambers who once said it's easier to be a Christian in a prison cell than at a party. I know I've been caught out at parties, I tell you. There are all kinds of ways in which we can find ourselves incredibly uncomfortable, because we know there are things we ought to say and things we ought to do, things we can't go along with. And sometimes we don't say it and don't do it. And this is the challenge. When Carol and I helped in the team for BBC Radio Lancashire. we were members of the little group doing religious programming for the God Spot. And when we come in, I remember the first time it quite shocked me. Somebody said quite loudly on the production floor, "Here come the God botherers." They often called us that. I think underneath, I know from one or two, there was great irritation that we're taking up studio time. They had to have this God spot, of course. They had to do this bit of religion. But these people coming in, and I think underneath, if you'd really pushed people, and they'd listened, of course, to what was said about the reality of God at work in our lives, in the world, about the challenge, they would have really hated us. God botherers, they said, and it stuck with me, God botherers. And I thought about, am I being enough of one? That poster, I remember it as a young person. If you were on trial for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Do you remember seeing that poster? Some of it was quite, I remember thinking, yeah, what evidence? Because as a Baptist minister, I suppose I've got a bit more evidence than some. But really, when it comes down to it, to the ways in which sometimes some people, even now, I think within our own fellowship, and this is where we've got to really understand how deeply belonging to Jesus will make others uncomfortable. I remember a man coming up when I was preaching in a church away, coming up to me, and I'd been talking about being brave, and he said to me, "I'm an accountant, and I was told last week by a partner that I had to turn a blind eye, but there's this very, very wealthy client, the biggest we have, always has this part of their books audited fairly gently." And he said, I had to go to the senior partner and say I couldn't do it. And he said to me, "I know my job's on the line now." And I don't know how the story ended, but it could be bad. It can be bad. Think of a man who said to me, "Where I work in the team, it's just so toxic because there's blasphemy almost every sentence. And there's no regard at all. They often ridicule Christian things." And he said, I think they probably know I'm a Christian, but I'm going to have to say something. I really know I must." And I caught up with him later. And he said, "You know, God gave me the strength. And they heard me. Now I know that, of course, they know how to rile me. But they also respect, they've shown a bit of respect. And what was more, there was one other Christian who'd been anonymous too." I think of the lady I baptized in my first church, who was just a wonderful person, just so sort of humble and winsome. And her husband was a builder. He actually owned his small building firm. And it was a very strong marriage. But when she was baptized, he expressed such anger. And he made her life so miserable. And we used to pray, and I remember seeing him, and we used to long, and he was so miserable day after day. And she would do church and pray and say, and he couldn't bear it. And I remember thinking about the persecution, that poor lady. I would look out on her and see her, and the persecution she was going through. Actually, with that story, right through it, in the end, she won him. The Lord won him to himself through her. And there was a wonderful sense that in the end, he made a confession about the kind of persecutor he'd been. He came and told me about it. He said, "I've said terrible things." He said, "I've said terrible things about you." He said, "I've just hated what's happened to my wife. She's changed for worse." He said, "Now I realize it's so much better than it could be." And in the end, he became a pastor. And the story of what can happen must not blind us, and that's a good story, to the awfulness of what else can happen. And I don't know where some of us are. I know one or two of us here have had, I remember one of you telling me this bad story. it happens. And Jesus is saying, when you belong to me, it happens. But hear this, you're blessed. And I want you to know that part and parcel of belonging to me means the new way will thrust you into positions where you will make other people uncomfortable, or maybe worse. But within that, I want you to know you're in the right place for me. And the way in which the American Eugene Peterson paraphrases this is lovely. And I put it on the newsletter. Carol put this on the newsletter, where he paraphrases that verses 11 and 12. Count yourselves blessed. Every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close for comfort, and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens. Give a cheer, even. For though they don't like it, I do. And heaven applauds. And know that you're in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble. In good company. These Beatitudes have taken us and stretched us, certainly stretched me preaching them, I tell you. And as we look back, we realize Jesus never wants us to escape, evade reality. We're in real life, mourning, peacemaking, hungering and thirsting to do the right thing when the world often will not. Mild, with the gentleness, the strength of steel, and mercy giving, and making others uncomfortable as God botherers. And while this happens, says Jesus, something occurs, you wouldn't believe it. You actually feel you're in the right place, and you know you're in good company, and you can give a cheer because you're pleasing me in ways that will make your life so much richer, even blessed. And you'll be sort of happy God botherers. In fact, that's the vision, isn't it? That when we're all back and the church is absolutely full, I mean, it can begin now, but when we're absolutely full and we're all worshipping and got the children here inside and everything is great, that when we leave, people will say, hey, that's the Histon Baptist Church. Happy God botherers. People who really are out and out for Jesus.